Accession number 27329, Reel 4.
So I was extremely pleased to accept the Queen's Commission. It was quite an honour. The age of 38, a great way to carry on. Did the commissioning course here in Arborfield, which lasted about a month. We all knew our postings, and we were posted up to York, to the district workshops in York. A super job. As a captain, straight away, acting captain, three pips, and I was running the inspection team up there. We moved into an absolutely beautiful detached quarter on an officer's patch of about 20 houses at Strensel in York, and it was really, really good. Very pleased. Of course, having been married then since 63, and with all the moves, and with Wendy already into probably a third school, things, it was very disruptive in lots of ways, obviously, mostly from a wife. As a soldier, you tend to get used to it, to the moves and whatever, the different jobs and different experiences. But for the families, yes, it was quite disruptive, quite frustrating. Strensel itself is only 5 miles outside of city centre of York, and it was wonderful. We fell in love with the whole area and the whole place. Both the girls then started school in Strensel Village School, and our son Philip, he went to a local nursery school. And my wife got involved again with the local brownies this time in the girl guardian movement. We attended the Garrison Church and got quite involved there. We knew, got to know the padre very well. That was a very happy 2 years. I had a very good job as OC of a inspection team inspecting electronic equipment in the whole of the Northeast. A super team, a mixture of soldiers and civilians. It meant travelling quite a lot during the week. For them, all I did was go up, visit, do inspection reports, make comments and whatever. And a very good and a very exciting job it was too. During that tour, I obviously started thinking about what I wanted to do as a commissioned officer, because you were asked what would you like to do next as an officer, whereas when you were a warrant officer there was an element of choice, but most of the time you were told, here's your posting, this is where you're going, off you go. So I thought long and hard, took some advice, and I thought that it would be nice to get into the procurement game, i.e. new equipment coming into the army, and REMI playing a big part in this coming in. And so at the end of that tour in 75, I asked if I could be posted to Christchurch in Dorset, where we had a big unit there called Telecommunications Branch REMI. Been there for years, the actual unit was 9 MAG, 9 Maintenance Advisory Group. And so I put in for that, and I got it. And we moved down in at the end of 1975. Again, very fortunate, into another lovely quarter in Muddiford. I'm right on the seaside. Okay, it meant disruption again, obviously, for moving house. Again, moving schools. And the two girls went to the local school, and of course our son then, Philip, was old enough to start school, so he started school in Christchurch itself. Again, the job down there was so different and so interesting. I'll talk about the job first, and then I'll talk about what happened with the family. I was given the job of resident REMI officer with the Plessy Company up in Romsey in Hampshire, who were developing a huge communication system for the army called Ptarmigan. It was in its very early days of development then. The Ptarmigan system was like BT on wheels for Royal Signals, replacing their old Bruin system. But they were fortunate, and I was fortunate, in that they had a resident Remy officer there with them, actually working on site with the company, the prime contractor. It meant me motoring up and down from Muddyford every day, but that was all right, you know. I'd use my own car to start with, but they gave me an army car in the end, and it was very exciting. And we were there for the very hot summer of 76, right on the seaside, of course. It was fantastic. I was coming home in the evening around about 6 o'clock, and finding a note on the doorstep on the beach. Usual place, we're all there, because there were army officers' quarters, about 10 families, and we'd all go down the beach, stay down there till we had enough and came back, you know. That was really good. But it was starting to show up then that our two girls, in particular Wendy, who was very bright at school, needed continuity. She really needed to have some continuity in her life, because she'd been moving so often. And in our previous posting in York, we'd met daughters of a couple of the other officers who were at a boarding school up in Whitby, St Hilda's School in Whitby, run by an Anglican order of nuns, but it wasn't a convent, although it was like convent lines, but it was a Church of England type school. And we'd looked at that while we were there and liked the look of it. So we then started thinking seriously about the girls going to boarding school, because then I knew that I was going to be serving for at least another 10 years or more. And so it was important to get them continuity, because I knew this wouldn't be my last posting. However, so that's what we did. We looked at it all, we took them up there, and it was a long way from Christchurch all the way up to Yorkshire again. But they went up on interview and they did some exams, and they got accepted, and they became boarders in the school, which was very hard to start with, because we only had Philip, the son, at home then with us, who was going to the local school, and he missed the girls a lot. But of course, it was a girls' school, so, and that was it. And he was too young to go there anyway. At this time, in 1977, the Ministry of Defence decided that Christchurch was no longer viable as a site for the army, and it had to close. And all the work that was being done there was going to move up to Malvern in Worcestershire. And people were going to be either moved to Malvern or be posted. So I thought, here we go again. So I saw my boss in Christchurch, and I said, look, we've got this move coming off next year. I'm very settled in my job as this resident Remy officer. I get on well with the Plessy Company, as you know. Things are working well. Is there any chance of me staying in Romsey with the company when you all move to Malvern? And you'll still be my base, but instead of being in Christchurch, you'll be in Malvern. He said, I'll find out for you. So he got hold of our officers' postings department, and they decided, yeah, fine, for continuity, you can do that. So we the unit closed, and we decided then that, well, we didn't decide, we were going to have to move out of this army quarter in Muddyford anyway. We were given time, we didn't have to move straight away, but we were given time to rethink. Was I going to put the wife in an army quarter in Malvern, which was very limited, or what? So we'd never owned a house of our own. So we thought, well, now's a good opportunity to get into the housing market of our own. So up in Romsey, we looked around for a property, and found a three-bedroom detached that we could afford a mortgage for. And so that's what we did. We moved up there, moved into it. I worked for with the Plessy Company, coming home very close to where I worked every night, you know, wonderful. It was almost like being a civilian. Only I'm working for the army, not the Plessy Company. And all I had to do then was report up to Malvern in Worcestershire about once a fortnight, on a Friday or a Thursday, not a Friday. I'm talking to my boss in Malvern every day anyway on the telephone or by signal or whatever, or going to meetings where they came as well. And so I carried on, and I did a total of 5 years with this job, and it was absolutely brilliant. We'll talk about the work first, and then I'll come back to the family. I really got involved with the Spletti company. I got their confidence so much that I ended up going to meetings that I didn't have to go to, but they invited me to, where things were talked about commercial in confidence. They said to me, you know, you can come to this meeting, you can listen in. If you repeat it to your MOD people, you know, you'll be out, because we won't have you here, but I'm sure you won't. But it was so educational, it was so interesting. Having never been in industry at all, having been an ex-army apprentice, to be with these guys and to have their confidence and to learn how the system worked and where really can play a part with the Royal Signals about how we're going to maintain it all when it came into service, you know, because it was a highly complex, massive type project. And it was wonderful. I did give serious thoughts about asking Plessy about a job. I'd got to a stage where I was still a captain, of course, but I did have a reasonable pension at that stage, if I wanted to. But one or two of the senior Plessy people, who I became quite friendly with, gave me some advice. They said, think about it, Alan. You've got a good career till you're 55 now in the army. If you come to us now, I'm sure they'd give you a job in the development cycle of the ptarmigan system, but once all your army contacts had gone and you become part of the company, we've got to admit it, we're very much a hire and fire firm, and you may find that after 2 or 3 years it'll be, well, thanks very much, Alan, been wonderful having you, we have no more slots for you, goodbye. And then you're off. Now, you may find that that's acceptable to you because you can maybe go to another company or another firm, like people do in industry. And so I thought long and hard, and had long chats with the family, with my wife, and decided, no, we'd better stay in the army, I think. Because I was going to be due major in about a year's time at the end of this tour. And so we decided, yeah, time to move on. So in 1981, or at the end of 1980, I asked for a posting. But no, I was told you can stay with this Malvern Plessy arrangement until the end of 1980, and then you must be posted, and we'll work a posting out for you. Again, is there anything you would like to do, any particular job you'd like to do? And I said, well, if I'm going to stay in the army, I should get some experience in Germany again now, and I'd like to do a job outside of a workshop. So I'd like to do a staff job, if that's possible. Would you consider it? And so in the end of 1980, we were posted to Germany, up to Minden, up the north of Germany, to a unit called Headquarters Remy Corps Troops. Wonderful. Now, before we went, remember I mentioned our two girls were in boarding school up in Whitby, and we thought about our son, because he had two schools already, and he was only seven. And we thought, what are we going to do? So we looked at boarding schools for him. And in Salisbury, there was this lovely school, the Cathedral School in Salisbury, where you didn't have to be a chorister. You could go as a boy. And we looked at that. He sat some exams for a seven-year-old and was accepted. And so before we went to Germany, he started at the Cathedral School in Salisbury. And that's where he stayed until he was 13. So we went to Germany with the three children in the boarding school in UK, which, again, was, you know, it was sad from a point of view of not having the children around all the time, but they came home on holiday, on all their holidays. They didn't come home for a sort of half terms because it was too short to fly them out and fly them back. But there were lots of family in UK, and they made a lot of good friends at school who lived in the UK and invited them down. And so their experiences were all being broadened as well. So on reflection and looking back, it did all three of them a lot of good. And although if they were in this room today, they would probably say, oh yeah, see, that's what he's telling you. On reflection, now they're all adults and married with children of their own, they realise that because of our circumstances, it was the best thing to do. And it paid off for them. We can go back to that later on. So we went up to Germany, up to Minden. Again, we moved into a very nice army officer's house. It was a super job. There were lots of exercises going on then in Germany, which of course they don't do now because the circumstances have changed an awful lot. I went as a captain, and after a few, what was it, about 8 months I was there, my time came up for promotion to major. In those days it was 6 years from captain to major before you, as an ex-soldier, before you could be considered for promotion to major. Well, I'd had good reports all the way through every year. I'd been recommended for promotion, so that was fine. So I promoted to major. Still kept the same job, because that was the flexibility of the post I was in. And so I'm a major up now, very comfortable, nice salary, and very good. But I knew this wasn't going to last. And it was a three-year tour, which we did. And then my wife, again, we were involved in the local local church in Dusseldorf. Not so much the garrison church where there was, which there was with a padre, but my wife was thinking more of, she was thinking very seriously then about doing some work for the church on a professional basis, and she'd actually been doing some training, part-time correspondence courses, about becoming what she thought at the time a lay preacher in the Church of England. And she thought long and hard about that. Anyway, and started passing exams and getting qualified. It was then that she had some advice that she's doing all this hard work, getting all these qualifications for becoming a lay preacher. If she did 1 year residential in a theological college in UK, she could come out of that as, in those days, a deaconess in the Church of England, a proper appointment, whereby she could become a curate somewhere in a church, possibly with the Army Chaplains Department, not in uniform, but as a civilian. So thought long and hard about that. We're up in Minden, long discussions about it, long chats with UK minister that was over in Cologne, who we got quite friendly with, running the English church in Cologne, where we used to go. And he gave her the advice as well and said, yeah, you know, this is what you want to do. If you really want to commit yourself to the church, take it up professionally. And so that's what she did. So she went back then to UK for a year, sponsored, funnily enough, by the Royal Army Chaplains Department, because, well, your husband's in the army, we'll help with fees and things like that, which was very good of them. And so she came back. So for one period up in Minden, we had our three children in boarding school and a wife in a theological college for a year as a full-time boarder, and me up in Minden, which was very unusual, especially 1 year where part of that year that she was in, her holidays didn't coincide exactly as the boarding school holidays. So it was a question of getting the children out with me and then the wife following out later and all that. Got a bit complex for a while. But we worked on it and it worked out all right. We'll never forget, as I mentioned, our daughters were in boarding school in Whitby, with all run by an Anglican order of nuns. Lovely, lovely people. And when my wife announced that when they were on holiday, that she was going to become a full-time member of the church, they said, you're not going to become a nun, are you? Thinking that she was going to be, you know, their nickname for nuns, by the way, was Bugs, because they all wore black and crept around, you know. You're not going to be a bug, are you? And she said, no, don't worry, dear. Well, I'm not going to be that. No, I'm going to be a deaconess. Okay, fine. So that's what she did. And she did that while I was, as I said, up in Minden. Now, I was coming to the main of my tour in Minden. So again, it was decision time, what to do. Well, before I even thought about what the next posting was going to be, I had a phone call from a friend of mine in Dusseldorf. a Major Mike Dorwood, who ended up full colonel here. And he was running a team, an installation team in Dusseldorf, EB Tech Services. And he was coming to the end of his tour. And he phoned me up at my desk in Minden and said, where are you going next? Because I know your tour's going to end, isn't it, in about 6 months' time. I said, yeah. I said, I don't know. I haven't made my mind up yet. What to ask for? He said, well, I'm on the move in 6 months. And Remy postings have said to me, if I can find somebody suitable for this job, who knows what he's doing in Germany, who's got the background and experience, it was a very unusual job. He said, I've been asked to recommend somebody. And he said, my first thoughts were you. Are you interested? And I said, I certainly am. Yeah, it's a major slot. A really coveted post, you know, very good. And I said, oh yeah, I'll put in for it. He said, well, you put in for it and I'll tell my bosses that you are interested. And so that's what we did. And so in 1984, I put in for the job in Dusseldorf and it came up and I moved down there. And I moved down there while my wife was still in college, of course, in Salisbury Theological College. Anyway, we got a nice big flat in Dusseldorf, in a German street. You know, there were several army flats, but very, very comfortable. And she came back, fully qualified as a deaconess. I mean, they didn't wear a collar in those days. She used to wear chaplain department little crosses, little collar dogs, you know, that fit in your shirt. And what she did then was worked unpaid, voluntary, with the army chaplain in Dusseldorf, just helping him out. Only now and again, occasional services, you know, like baptisms, things where you didn't have to be a priest, because women weren't priested then. But there were certain things that she could do, and she could help out with services in the garrison church or wherever he wanted help. And I started this job now in Dusseldorf as OC SIAT, C-I-A-T, which stood for Communications Installations Advisory Team. And it consisted in Dusseldorf itself, part of the bigger setup called Remy Tech Services, of us team of myself and a hardcore of 10 senior NCOs who were responsible for fitting installations, communication installations into vehicles throughout the whole of Germany. And we were given the task of fitting the Tarbigan system, of which I've been involved in with Mr. Plessy, into raw signals vehicles throughout the whole of BAOR on a big 3-year program it started off. So I had to set to with my bosses or with my staff and with the raw signals again, planning how this was going to happen. This is in 1984. And it all looked excellent on paper. A nice program of going, first of all, up to a place called Verden, up in North Germany, where the 1st Armoured Division was in those days, big signal regiment. Spend a good 6 months or more with them, fitting their kit out. And when that was finished, go down to where 3 Division were in Zost. Again, 6 to 8 months, work with them. And then move down to another place called Deilinghofen, where the other division was, and fit their kit out there. A nice long program, all very steady, all Monday to Friday, not a problem. Until we'd moved up to, the team had moved up to Verden, and were starting in slow motion working on these installations into armoured vehicles, 432s they were called. We had it all planned out, 22 vehicles, all taken out of stock, old vehicles that had to be stripped right down to nothing and built up, working with the Plessy company, working with the installation company called Hunting High Vault of Worthing, who were supplying kits, were supposed to supply kits to us, and it all worked, looked as though it was starting off very, very nicely. However, a big fly in the ointment occurred because Margaret Thatcher, who was the Prime Minister at the time, told the Defence Department that the Americans under Ronald Reagan wanted to buy this Tarbigan system, massive system, worth a lot of money to the government, wanted to buy it. But before they were going to buy it, they wanted to see it working in Germany in the spring of 1985 up in Verden. And they wanted to see it operational, all in vehicles, all up and running, and off we go. Well, I mean, that's when a nightmare began, because I was running the team, along with the signal regiment, of course, who had to fit this all out on a very shortened time scale. And so off we went. And I was spending then almost, well, I was spending Monday to Friday up in Verden, out of Dusseldorf, and seriously getting down to the hard graft. Not only did I have my 15 senior NCOs, permanent staff, but all the other workers were coming from workshops in Germany on loan, only for about 6 weeks, and then having to go back. And all trades, you know, there were the metalsmiths who had to cut holes in the vehicles, there were vehicle mechanics who had to maintain the vehicles, and the technicians, you know, my old background, coming in doing all the wiring up with all the kits that were coming up, and all sorts of problems starting to arise. The Hunting High Volt, the company involved, suddenly had a problem with supplying the kits, and they were only coming over in dribs and drabs, and it was becoming a terrible nightmare. The poor old Hunting High Volt were having terrible trouble trying to supply these kits for a variety of reasons. We weren't exactly falling behind, but it was getting so frustrating, and it was the interest, having been made political now, was getting very high indeed in the MOD, and we were getting some very senior officers flying out from UK up to us in Verden to say, what's going on? You know, are you going to make this spring deadline? The Royal Signals were getting worried about parts of their kit that were being non-operational because we were fitting their vehicles out, and we were having to take some of their operational kit off the air to fit into these vehicles, you see. And of course, bearing in mind what we were in Germany for, the Russians were still there, Eastern Germany, there was still the threat. So, you know, things were getting quite intense in one way or another. And we were working then, started to work on a 24-hour shift system to get all of this kit in. And it took a lot of grief and a lot of strife to do it, which we did. And we got it all in, we got it up and running. The Royal Signals put on this huge demonstration in the spring of 1985. The Americans sent this big team over to look at it, and they loved it. But it got turned down in the end by the American government because they had seen the French system, which had been in service for 2 years, and said, well, I'm sure you've got a wonderful system here, and thank you for the demonstration, but we want to buy something that's already in service. Yours hasn't been exercised properly. You know, yes, you've given us a demonstration, but you've not shown it at regimental level, and so we're going to buy the French system. So that was a big letdown. I mean, not from our point of view, and as much as, you know, we'd done our job and away we went. And but I felt sorry for all the people in the government who put a lot of work in. A lot of heads rolled in the civil service and with Hunting High Volt for, you know, for being a bit slow in producing kits and not doing this, that and the other. But anyway, all our guys worked so well and had worked very hard. A lot of people putting a lot of time in. And I was very honoured at the end of that, at the end of 1985, to be appointed an MBE for the work that I'd done on that. It was really, I know it was for, yeah, the citation would say about what work I'd done, but in fact it was a big pat on the back for all the team that had worked so hard. And I was really, in 1986, going up to Buckingham Palace, you know, to get the MBE, and that was fantastic. From Prince Charles. The Queen was in New Zealand or somewhere doing a tour, but we did that from Prince Charles, and it was wonderful. And we're still in Germany then, of course, because we still had two other divisions to do. Now, we talked early on about disruption to our family life. Well, by then, my wife, who was not really being worked to her at all, to her capability with the church, with the Army Chaplain Department, I think they found that looking at her, she was still wife of rather than Deaconess Morton. And so I came home one Friday night, I remember, from one of the upcountry, And she said to me, look, you've still got another year to go on this tour. It's going to be the same routine by the look of it, you know, away Monday to Friday. The kids are in boarding school. I want to get on with the work in the church. I'm going to have to look for a job in UK, in the church. And we, fine, that's fine. I said, you know, you've got to do that. So she then got, she used to get the Church Times newspaper, and she'd rung several jobs and applied for them. And at the end of, I think it was coming towards the end of 86, she got a posting, to, a move, a posting. You know, I'm talking the army language again. She got a move to Coventry in UK as a curate, as a deaconess. And off she went. And so I stayed in Germany, still in the flat, unaccompanied, for the last few months of my tour there. And which completed the job. I'd handed over, when it came to posting time, they got a major out to take over from me just to finish it all off. I knew then that, as well as the MBE, I'd been selected for promotion to Lieutenant Colonel, which was a great honour, you know, for an ex-ranker to reach that rank. There's only, at that time in the Army service, there were only 10 Lieutenant Colonel slots for anybody in Remy getting commissioned from the ranks. And so it was a great honour, you know, and a privilege. So I knew that was coming up in 87, sometime in 1987. And so here we are, thinking about where we're going to go for postings. So I said to our postings department, they actually came out to Germany, they did a tour, and those who were near posting went and an interview. So I had an interview with the colonel who was doing officers' postings. He then confirmed that, yes, in your next job, you will be promoted to lieutenant colonel. We're trying to find a slot for you. I said, well, look, I'm coming to the end of my service. Only a couple of years to do. My wife is in Coventry, and she's in the church there.